Airline Pilot Guy, episode number 27. Hello, I'm Captain Jeff, your host. I'm the Airline Pilot Guy, and you're listening to Airline Pilot Guy, episode number 27. I am recording this live from the Hyatt Place Hotel in, well, somewhere near Fort Myers, Florida. I invite you to sit back and relax. Should be pushing back here shortly for flight 27. On today's episode, we're going to talk about, well, some updates to a couple things we talked about on the last episode. An 80-year-old woman pilots and lands safely an airplane after her husband dies. Let's see, a 737 United experienced some turbulence outside of Houston. Have reader feedback, or listener feedback, I should say, from Liz, Kevin, Chris, Lee, Jeff, and more. Hey there. As I mentioned, I'm here in Fort Myers. I'm sorry I didn't get a podcast out last week. I was really expecting to. And in fact, I had a 3-day and a 2-day back-to-back Monday through Friday. And I was planning on recording last Tuesday. It's now another Tuesday, a week later. But you know what? I forgot. I forgot to take my microphone and my audio interface and some other recording gear. And I thought, yeah, what the heck? I'll do it on my 2-day trip, which laid over in Milwaukee. And it was a long day, and I just got tired and didn't have time to do it. So, well, I did have time. I didn't have the energy. And I owe as much as I can to you, my listeners, as much energy as I can give you. So, as I said, I'm in Fort Myers, Florida, actually south of Fort Myers in Coconut. This place is called Coconut Point. And a very nice hotel, Hyatt Place. And I'm on day 2 of a 4-day trip this week. Let's see, what else? Oh, let me tell you about something that happened today. I was in Orlando last night. This morning we left Orlando for LaGuardia. And en route, we had leveled off, and about 10 minutes after level off, all of a sudden I noticed the airplane was kind of exhibiting a little bit of a very, very light turbulence, but it just seemed kind of odd. And I look over at my airspeed, and the airspeed is very low for the altitude that we were at. And I look over at the throttles and the engines, and the number one throttle was at idle. Now, mind you, I had the autopilot system, the autoflight system hooked up. The VNAV was hooked up. The auto throttles were hooked up. And the left throttle on its own decided just to retard to idle power. Okay, one engine at 33,000 feet just can't maintain that for very long. The airspeed starts bleeding off. And so immediately I thought, okay, return the left throttle to maximum power for this particular scenario. Did that, and the aircraft speed kind of held steady, but it was not, where it should be. And Dick, my co-pilot, said, "Do you think we should put some slats out?" You know, slats are those devices on the front of the leading edge of the wing that change the shape of the wing, make it more suitable for low speed flight, gives it more lift. And I said yes, because we were well below the maximum slat extension speed, so we extended the slats. And but with both power, or both throttles at the climb power setting, or maximum setting for that particular regime, the airspeed wasn't really increasing. It was increasing a little bit, but not enough to make me comfortable. And so I told the co-pilot to go ahead and ask air traffic control for a lower altitude, which Fortunately for us, they granted. And so we descended a couple thousand feet. And during the descent, we were able to trade some of that potential energy into kinetic energy and increase the airspeed and get to a nice, safe flying airspeed again. So what is the moral to the story here? Well, a lot of things can happen in flight that are very insidious. And this was one of them. Now, the system should have, the auto throttle system should have disconnected with that kind of disparity between one throttle at full power and another throttle at idle power. But it didn't. No warning systems activated. No air traffic control restrictions or limitations were violated. But it was kind of a precarious situation, and we recovered it, I think, rather well. And I don't think anybody in the airplane noticed that we had gone through that particular event. But this is just another example of autoflight. Obviously, autoflight is essential for the way we operate in today's world, but you can't trust it completely. Now, those of you out there who are in favor of these airplanes, autonomous airplanes flying around just using automation with no pilots on the cockpit monitoring things, well, here's an example of why that's not a good idea, because things don't always work the way they're supposed to. So let me tell you what, that got my attention. Very much so. So mechanics met us when we arrived in New York and decided to take a look at the clutch mechanism on the auto throttles. So hopefully that won't happen again, because as I said, it came to us with, it was quite a surprise to us. Let me just put it that way. Okay, last episode we talked about, I talked about the ExpressJet flight that had a landing incident at Denver, low visibilities. Somebody thought that perhaps they had landed short, maybe even hit the approach lighting system. There was some mention of smoke in the cabin, perhaps the cockpit as well. And so the NTSB investigated, and the Federal Aviation Administration did, about the air traffic controller's actions during this whole incident. Now, you remember, we listened to that tape together, and that first broadcast by what we now know was the United flight or the ExpressJet flight saying that they were evacuating the airplane. It sounded like it was kind of a prank call or somebody that just had a handheld VHF radio and was making some kind of a spurious broadcast. And so the controller thought, well, that this is not real. And it wasn't until the second broadcast about evacuating on the runway that the controller realized that this was, in fact, really happening. And he pushed the button or activated the emergency response that was appropriate for the situation. And there was some kind of report here that said that the NTSB was looking into perhaps launching an official investigation. And an update that I downloaded here said that the NTSB is not launching an official investigation. So let's see. There was an update on what actually happened during the ExpressJet flight. Let's see. Sources at the airport reported that the smoke began to emanate when the aircraft was on short final, descending through about 1,000 feet above ground level, quickly filling the cockpit. When the aircraft was just about to overfly the numbers, which means the very end, approach end of the runway, the crew had lost visual reference due to the smoke and brought the aircraft down rapidly, stopping as fast as they could. Tower did not believe that the first Mayday call, already after touchdown, and pressed the crash button after the second Mayday call. On April 6th, the NTSB reported that they are not going to investigate the occurrence. The cause of the smoke was determined to be an engine seal leak. There was no fire. Okay, so that's what happened with that ExpressJet flight, and that is the update. Now, the other thing I talked about last, well, I talked about several things, actually, but the other thing that I talked about that I just started going on and on about, and I really wasn't completely sure. In fact, I started painting myself into a corner when I was trying to explain how an air conditioning pack worked. I think it was Chris from Boston asked about the about packs, what that means and such. Now, I thought that it was an acronym for something. And let's see, this article that I pulled up on Wikipedia says that the term air conditioning pack or AC pack is used differently by different sources. Boeing, Airbus, Embraer, Bombardier, and Lockheed use the term as an abbreviation of package applied to both pneumatic and non-pneumatic systems. At least one business jet supplier uses the term PAC instead on their systems control panels, said to be an abbreviation for pneumatic air conditioning. Supposedly, PAC can also be an acronym for pneumatic air cycle kit. However, this abbreviation is not used by the major manufacturers that I've just talked about. Okay, so again, I tried to explain the whole process of these air cycle machines and how they take the bleed air, the very, very hot and high pressure bleed air from the engines, and turn it into nice cold air that we can use to cool the aircraft and also pressurize the aircraft. And let me just briefly explain that again. It's basically a reverse, name for this, Brayton cycle, which is the thermodynamic cycle of a gas turbine engine. And so what happens is we take this hot, very high pressure air from one of the compressor stages of a turbine engine and pipe it into this air cycle package or air cycle machine. And it's directed first into a primary heat exchanger, which is outside air is usually, flown over or poured over or whatever you want to use, the hot bleed air to cool it down a little bit. Then this goes into a centrifugal compressor, and this compression heats the air, actually gets hotter than it was when it first entered, and it's sent to a secondary heat exchanger. And let's see, at this point, the temperature of the compressed cooled air is somewhat greater than the ambient temperature of the outside air. The compressed cooled air then travels through the expansion turbine, which extracts work from the air as it expands, cooling it to below ambient temperature. So, and the air gets down to about minus 20 to minus 30 degrees centigrade. That's pretty darn cold. And then what happens is there's a valve that kind of mixes that air, that very, very cold air, with the hot bleed air that's bypassing the air cycle machine. And that's the way we get the proper temperature air through the vents in the aircraft. And because the aircraft is kind of a sealed tube with just a couple openings that we control the pressurization with, the air that's coming out of the air cycle machines, either hot or cold or something in between, is what actually pressurizes the airplane. So I hope I didn't make that even worse by trying to explain it again. But anyway, so I just wanted to mention the air cycle machine. And interestingly, I did a little research on this and found that, and I didn't know this, the Boeing 787, that brand new airliner from Boeing, first called the 7E7, and now it's called the 787, also nicknamed the Dreamliner, they designed that airplane to use or not use bleed air for anything. So most airliners out there are using pneumatic bleed air to power the pressurization and cooling and all that kind of stuff. And also we tap that bleed air to provide air into the leading edge of the wings and the tail, several different areas to prevent ice from forming when we fly into icing conditions. To make the 787 much more fuel efficient, they decided that they would not use bleed air. They wouldn't tap some of that highly compressed air off the engine. So it makes the engines much more fuel efficient. But, okay, so how are you going to pressurize an airplane? You know, you got to have some kind of a source for air pressure. And how are you going to keep the wings free of ice and how the engine cowlings and the engine inlets and such clear of ice? Well, they're kind of going back. It's kind of a retro thing. You know, back before the days of turbine engine powered airplanes, they used air compressors, electrically powered air compressors. And so that is what is pressurizing the Boeing 787. They have a series of very high powered electrical or electronic air compressors that provide the compressed air for pressurizing the aircraft and heating and cooling, etc. Also, they use electricity to provide heat to keep the leading edges of the wings and tail and critical components such as the engine inlets and other critical parts of the airplane from getting ice. So it's kind of a little bit of a retro application of technology, but because they're not tapping this bleed air from the engines are much more fuel efficient. So I haven't heard any reports yet of any problems with this new system. So we will see how that works. But when you think about it, you know, pneumatic, compressed bleed air coming off the engines and piping it through all these pipes, you know, very, very hot, high pressure air through the airplane to provide air conditioning and pressurization and, anti-icing throughout the airplane is kind of dangerous, especially when you consider that this is, you know, potentially, it could be dangerous as far as it's dirty air. You know, you could, if there's a leak in the cabin, it could be pretty nasty. So they're eliminating that completely with this new design. So we will see how that works, won't we? Okay. Now, for today's main topic, you may have heard about this. This was earlier this month. An 80-year-old woman was able to successfully land a twin-engine airplane in northeastern Wisconsin after her husband became unconscious at the controls and later died. So I was able to find the audio recordings from this, not on liveatc.net. Surprisingly, I found it through some other sources. And now this original recording was like 40-something minutes long, and I thought that was entirely too long for my podcast. And so I kind of, you know, edited it and narrowed it down to just some clips here. It's still quite long, actually, but it's not quite as long as the original. So let's listen to what happened to this young lady, this 80-year-old woman, in her Cessna.
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
I have it in sight. My present altitude is about 2,500 feet.
Okay, are you talking to Green Bay or to Sturgeon Bay? Ellen, are you calling Sturgeon Bay or talking to Green Bay Air Traffic Control?
I'm doing fine, but I'm getting too close to the airport to land right now. I'll have to make another turn.
Now, one of the problems here right away was that apparently Helen had at least a couple radio frequencies tuned up, and I think she was listening to both the people at Sturgeon Bay and also Green Bay. So that's why there's some confusion and some questions about, or who are you talking to? Are you talking to Sturgeon Bay or Green Bay?
Helen, are you going to Green Bay or are you going to Sturgeon Bay? Over.
I'm not sure. I'm over the Sturgeon Bay airport.
Okay, very good. Are you talking to Green Bay at all, or are you only talking to me here at Sturgeon Bay Airport?
It seems like I have two different voices. Somebody said they'd have a pilot there shortly to talk me down.
Very good. I'm the pilot at Sturgeon Bay Airport, and I hear the aircraft just fly over. Helen, if you could continue to circle right around the airport as you see it, we'll coordinate what we're going to, the approach we're going to make here, okay?
Okay, will do.
And you tell me how much fuel you have, the fuel gauges. Can you locate the fuel gauges and tell me how much fuel you have? Half tanks, full tanks, or...
I'm not sure. We just came from Rome, Georgia, so they're not real full. They're down. The left tank is a little over the one mark, and the right tank is a little under the one mark.
Okay, very good. Stand by.
November 5, Whiskey Tango, Cardinal 19119er. We're at 6,500 feet over the airport. We'll stay out of your way, but if I can be of any help, I'm certainly willing to do that. Meantime, I know they're waiting for someone to arrive at the tower that can help with that particular aircraft.
Thank you. I appreciate your help.
Sound like you're doing great. We're just going to be looking for you. You're still south of the airport, yes? Okay, I just want to make sure that she's got ample clearance. Liner. Thank you, 119er. I'll make certain that we maintain adequate distance.
Do you want me to go lower?
No, you're doing fine. Stay where you are.
Okay, Helen, is John in the cockpit in the left seat, and is his seatbelt shoulder harnesses on? Over.
No, it is not. I don't know if I can get it on him or not. He took it off right when this was happening.
You see, that's fine. Make sure your shoulder harnesses are on, though, and your seatbelt is secure, and we're working on the plan right now. Stand by.
Okay, I've got mine on.
Okay, Helen, we're going to launch another aircraft. It'll come up, and it'll fly right next to you and give you instructions, and we'll fly right with you all the way down to the airport. There'll also be somebody on the ground watching you. Over.
Okay, I got it.
Okay, just continue to circle the airport. We'll be up there in about 10 minutes. So just keep the power setting to where it is. Keep the configuration of the airplane the same. Just keep circling around the airport at the altitude and the airspeed that you're at. Okay, you're doing a fine job, Helen. Just continue to fly like...
My airspeed is about 170 right now.
Okay, that's fine. That's good protection for the configuration of the airplane. You do not have any flaps down, is that correct?
I got it.
You have no flaps down, is that correct?
That is correct. And the gear is still up.
Okay, very good. We'll continue in that configuration until another aircraft comes up next to you. It'll be a blue and white aircraft. I'll be talking to you on the radio. And there'll be another voice on the radio, a female voice, and she will be talking to you also. She's familiar with the aircraft. And keep your speed just where it is. It's a good, safe speed. We'll have you reduce the power once the aircraft comes up next to you. Helen, did you copy?
Okay, I gotcha, but I gotta get over there. Do you want me to put my flaps down?
Don't do that yet. Sturgeon Bay, Unicom, there is a pilot that has launched a plane that's familiar with that aircraft that's gonna come on shortly. Please follow their instructions. I know everybody's trying to help, but Whiskey Tango, just wait. There's an aircraft on the way that's gonna escort you down with a pilot that's familiar with that aircraft.
Thank you.
Hi, Helen, this is Kathy.
Hi, Kathy. It's a hell of a place to be.
You know, but it sounds like you're doing great.
Well, I did solo, but that's as far as I went.
Yeah, but that's fantastic, and you got a lot of airtime with your hubby. My hubby's the guy that's gonna go airborne and just kinda talk you down.
Where is he located right now?
He's going to take off from the airport in about 5 minutes. He's here at the airport. Helen, did you copy?
Yes, I copied. My cell phone was on the floor. I got to get it turn it on again.
Okay.
Do they have emergency services out there?
We're standing by the terminal, and Rob thought he'll take off and come up near you and help work you down. We thought you should probably land to the north.
My cell phone is ringing right now. Is that you guys? I hate to tape off the headphones.
Just disregard it. We're all here on the radio.
Thank you.
So the plan is for you to land to the north?
All right, I got it.
And the winds are light. And just a couple things to remember. And I'm just going to talk to you about this while they get the airplane ready and launch.
Okay, go ahead.
You don't ever want the airspeed to get below 100. You probably know that, right?
Yes, I do. How do I control that? With the throttle?
With the throttle, what is the throttle set at RPM-wise right now?
Okay, well, that's the first clip that I have, and the next clip I've advanced it a little bit, so we don't take the entire episode listening to this, but obviously, I think her name was Kathy, the wife of the guy that's going to get in another airplane and head up there and try to talk Helen down, is calmly, you know, talking to her and trying to find some information out from Helen, and doing a wonderful job, actually. So let's continue listening to this as it unfolds.
I'm going 160.
Say again?
I'm going 160.
Okay, you're doing 160, okay? And where is the throttle set? What's the RPM?
I'm looking at the RPM, it's about 23 inches.
Okay, and that RPM goes with the top levers. Are you familiar with the top levers?
Okay, actually, she was looking at the manifold pressure, I'm pretty sure.
No, I am not.
Now, the throttles, are you familiar with the throttles?
Not on this aircraft, no.
Now, remember, she had said earlier that she had soloed. I don't know how long ago it had been since she had soloed, but usually when you solo, you're in a single-engine airplane, a fixed prop. This is a much more complicated airplane. It's a twin-engine airplane with a constant speed prop, so you have many different controls involved in managing thrust and such.
This is a twin-engine aircraft.
I don't know if I have enough gas. Do you think that's a good idea?
What's that, Helen?
Okay, again, some confusion here. Obviously, she's not answering anything that Kathy has asked her. So I think that on another frequency, Green Bay may be telling her to proceed to Green Bay, and Helen is looking at her fuel state and saying, you know what, I don't think that's a good idea. Is that a good idea? And then Kathy says, what? What was that, Helen?
They want me to go to Green Bay.
Where did you say the fuel indicator was?
The right one is just a little under half between up to the left. And the left one is on one.
Okay, so it's just under a half, you said?
Not half full. It's close to nothing.
Oh, okay. It's close to a quarter tank. Okay. Are you over the airport right now?
No, I'm headed south right now. I'm about even with Algoma.
Okay, now I would start heading north back to Sturgeon Bay Airport.
Who said they want me to come to Green Bay? Somebody wanted me to come to Green Bay.
Your son is here and said no.
Okay, again, I think she has a couple frequencies going on here. There's a lot of confusion, probably some folks down at Green Bay not realizing that she's communicating with the folks at Sturgeon Bay. And there's also some confusion here about the fuel state. I think that Kathy and folks down at Sturgeon Bay think that she has a lot more fuel. I think Helen understands that her fuel state is pretty critical. Now, I'm not sure what one means on the fuel gauge of a Cessna. I think it's a 410. I don't know. Kathy is interpreting this as maybe a quarter of a tank on one tank and less than a quarter of a tank on the other. I don't know. Perhaps somebody out there knows how those fuel gauges work. But anyway, again, still some confusion about who she's talking to and where they're directing her.
Because of the fuel Sturgeon Bay, and if you just head north, if you're by Algoma, just follow the shoreline north.
I know where Green Bay is. Do they want me to go to Green Bay or Sturgeon Bay?
Mom, who told you to go to Green Bay? We're preparing for you here.
Okay. I'm gonna turn right now. I'm turning towards Sturgeon Bay.
Mom, who told you to go to Green Bay? We hate to override other people.
I don't know who I'm talking to half the time.
So there you go. She doesn't know who she's talking to half the time. I think she's doing a wonderful job of not, you know, panicking at all. She seems to be very, very much in control of the situation. And by the way, that's her son. Jim is on the frequency now, talking to his mom. Can you imagine what it must be like? Your mom is up there flying this airplane and she's not really, you know, she's not a licensed pilot. Yeah, she has some experience flying an airplane, but not a complex airplane like this one. Wow.
Mom, this is Jim. I wanted to know who called you to Green Bay.
Roger that. I will do. You're telling me to the left? I'm trying to slow it down. In fact, I lost the airport right now.
Mom, this is Jim. Are you talking to Green Bay?
No, I don't think so.
Mom, is your intention to come back to Sturgeon Bay?
That's correct.
All right, now you understand there's another plane coming up and you're going to follow him in, right?
Yes, I do.
All right, the throttles, you were worried about that. You know, the you kill the power by pulling them back, not forward.
I know. I don't want to pull it all the way back, so then I'll lose everything, won't I?
All of them I'm pulling back. That wouldn't be the worst.
I'm at 1,500 feet. Can I put my gear down yet? I lost the airport.
Helen, it's a black runway. Just fly along the shoreline if you lost the airport, and you'll see the big, long, black north-south runway. And what comes up is the hangars with the shiny roofs you'll see.
I know it when I see it, but right now with everything going on.
Now, do you know where those two throttle levers are? They're to the far left.
Yes, I do. I'm at 135 right now.
Okay, and what, that's your airspeed. What is your manifold pressure, say?
25.
Okay, that's good. And we won't put the gear down yet. What I'm gonna have you do is just kind of circle over the airport. Once you see the airport,
I see it now.
Over the airport.
I see it now.
Okay, you see it now.
Is the other airplane in the air?
Yes.
He's not in the air yet. He's on the ramp. He's just starting up.
I'm just going over the highway. You know, I think I'm going to run out of fuel on my right tank.
You're really low. You should climb a bit. You're not going to land this fast.
Okay, Helen.
I'm climbing to 2,000. Somebody better get here in a hurry.
Okay, Helen. Put the gear down. Helen, did you find the gear lever?
I found it, but I can't get it down. Oh, there it is.
Okay, pull it out and push down.
That was an aircraft.
Okay, we see you over the airport. You're flying parallel to the runway. Now, what you'll need to do is just circle back around. What's your airspeed?
135.
Do you have the gear down with 3 green?
That is correct.
Very good. You look good.
around 35.
Okay. Now, if you're that low, why don't you bring it back around? Jim says he sees you north of the airport.
I'm at 1,500 feet right now.
Okay, stay at 1,500 feet. Now, Helen, do you know if you get in the pattern on the downwind?
I think I can.
Okay, so get in the pattern on the downwind for the north runway, so that's west of the hangar.
Sir, to Bay Unicom, copy 43 X-ray.
I copy you.
Okay, very good. 43 X-ray will be airborne in 10 minutes.
Okay, Helen is coming up on the downwind.
I have a visual on Helen. She's turning to base now, and everything looks fine. Just tell her to fly down the runway, continue to the north. I'll rejoin her on the next downwind.
I'm at about 1,300 feet.
Just above empty.
Okay, very good. You're looking good, Helen. Just fly down the runway and continue to the north, circle around, and do the exact same thing you just did, and I'll be up to catch you on the next downwind.
I don't think I can circle again.
Okay, do you have the landing gear down, Helen?
Yes, I do. I'm coming in too fast.
Go back up. I'm going to be airborne in 5 minutes. That's it. Just sit, not a big pitch, just a little pitch. That's it. Just circle right around. Leave the gear down. Leave the gear down.
Okay, he's watching this from the ground, kind of giving her some instructions, and eventually he's going to take off and fly next to her and guide her in.
That's it. What's your airspeed?
My airspeed is 125.
Okay, bring in a little bit of power. Bring the power up just a little bit. Just about 1 or 2 inches if you know what the manifold pressure is. Just bring it up about a quarter inch to a half inch. You want your airspeed at 150. 150.
No less than 2,000 manifold pressure, Helen.
You want my airspeed at 150?
At 150 on the airspeed.
That's pretty fast.
No, it's not.
Okay, pick it up. Pitch up there, Helen. Pitch up. You're turning too sharp. Just fly south. Fly south. Keep going south of the airport.
I'm getting all these instructions, and I'm not paying attention to where I'm flying.
Okay, that's right. You're doing great, Helen. Just stay on that heading. I'll be joining up with you here in about 2 minutes. I'm airborne.
Hurry up.
I'm coming up right behind you. You're doing great. Just hurry up. Stay on a south heading there. What's your airspeed?
My airspeed is 135. Should I push it up?
Yes, push it up just a little bit. Not much. You did good on the last push-up. So up just another quarter inch or so.
Okay, this goes on for another several minutes. Let me jump to the next clip here, because I know this is taking quite a while. But this is just fascinating. I think you would agree.
When I land, do I pull the throttle all the way back?
Yes, Helen. Bring the throttle all the way back to dead idle and just use the rudders and keep in the nose. Don't overreact. But just keep the nose going down the center of the runway and just lightly bring the brakes on. You know, just push both pedals down evenly as much as you can. You're looking great. You're looking good. Okay, now bring it over to the left here just a little bit. Do you look pretty much in line with the runway?
Yeah, it looks...
Okay, I agree. Now, it's real important to just be real light on the controls. And the whole idea is make sure that nose is trimmed up. Is it heavy, or are you having to pull back? Okay, Helen, you got to bring the power back. Bring the nose down and power back at the same time. There we go.
Power back now?
Just a little. Bring the power back just a little bit. You're looking great. Stay right in line with the runway, just like private pilot days.
He's doing a great job. He's, basically instructing this lady, who is not a pilot, on how to fly the airplane. And he's using a very, very calm demeanor, a very reassuring demeanor. He's doing a fantastic job.
That's it, just like solo days. Get right in line with the runway. They'll put the runway right between your legs. Put the runway right down the middle of the runway. Stay right down the middle of the runway. Okay, bring the power back a little bit. Bring the power back. Okay, you're too high. Go around. Power up, power up, power up. Power up, power up. Just a little. No, don't pull back. Push. No, power up. Keep your wings level. That's it. Full power. Full power. Full power. Go up. Up, up, up. Pull, 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 pull. Pull up a little bit. Pull up. Helen, pull up. Just, okay, that's enough. That's enough. That's enough. Okay, you were just a little bit to the right of the runway. That's okay. We're doing fine. We're going to come around and try it again. Don't turn yet.
Okay, wow. That was the first attempt, folks, and yeah, she was a little bit too high and a little bit too fast, and so he finally had to say, okay, you need to go around, put the power in, pull the nose up, not too much, and so he talked her through a go-around, which is a very complicated maneuver, and so she's still okay. You could tell the excitement in Rob's voice there, but again, he's reassuring her. He's still exuding a lot of confidence in her, and she's still flying. So let's go back. There's some more stuff happening here. She goes around the pattern, and now this last segment, she's on final approach again for her last landing attempt.
I got to land pretty quick. My gas gauge shows nothing.
Okay, we're going to get it on the next time around. You got to be lined up pretty much with the runway, though. I'm just coming over to the top. Just stay level, stay level. Stay level. I'm going to come around to the other side of you. That's it. You're doing great. Okay, don't overbank. That's it. Roll it out a little bit. I'm just going to bring it around and try one more time. We got to get you pretty much in line with the runway. Bring the nose up. Bring the nose up. Nose up. Nose up. Keep turning. Keep turning right. Bring the nose up. Keep turning right.
I'm running out of gas.
No, you're doing fine. You're doing fine. Bring it around.
No, my left
answer,
my right engine is out.
Okay.
Wow. He's saying, no, you're doing fine. And she says, no, my right engine is out. She just lost an engine. Folks, for even an experienced pilot, you lose an engine for real in a twin engine airplane. This is a big deal. It takes a lot of skill to continue to fly the airplane safely. And she's doing it.
I gotta land pretty quick. My gas gauge shows nothing.
Okay, we're gonna get it on the next time around. You gotta be lined up pretty much with the runway, though. I'm just coming over to the top. Just stay level, stay level, stay level. I'm gonna come around to the other side of you. That's it. You're doing great. Okay, don't overbank. That's it. Roll it out a little bit. I'm just gonna bring it around and try one more time. We gotta get you pretty much in line with the runway. Bring the nose up. Bring the nose up.
She's about to lose her left engine.
Turn right a little bit. Turn right. Okay, bring the nose down. Now, nose down. Nose down. Come on, get down. Get down. Bring the power back. Power back. Power back. Reduce the power. Over. Reduce the power. Nose down. Over. Helen, do you read me?
Wow. Folks, I don't know if you know what happened there. She lost her right engine. Then her left engine was losing power because she was running out of fuel in that fuel tank as well. There was a lot of talking over each other at the very end there, but I think she actually lost her left engine as well. So she was basically gliding in at the last, you know, few seconds of that recording, and she landed. It wasn't the best landing in the world, but she got down safely. The nose wheel collapsed on landing, but the main gear stayed in position, and she skidded to a stop, and she escaped this entire thing with just minor injuries. I'd say that this was a miracle.
Ted, that was probably the lousiest landing in the history of this airport. Some of us here, particularly me, would like to buy you a drink and shake your hand.
Yes, me, I would love to. I mean, I can't tell you how much I would love to meet with Helen and talk about this thing and buy her a drink. Now, the sad part, of course, is this entire time, her husband of I don't know how many years, I'm sure quite a number of years, died. That's what precipitated this whole event. He died of massive heart failure. And so he had passed away somewhere early in this whole event. And Helen was sitting there next to him, flying this airplane, trying to save her life as well. So, I mean, job well done. Even an experienced pilot, that would have been a challenge. But Helen obviously didn't have a lot of experience, and she did a fantastic job. So, now, again, you may have heard a little bit about this in the news a few weeks ago. And, you know, they treated it, you know, with a little bit of attention. But, you know, doing the research that I did on it and hearing these audio tapes, I'm just flabbergasted. It's amazing. You know, if the weather had been bad, if it had been instrument meteorological conditions, this would have had an entirely different bad outcome. But luckily, it was visual meteorological conditions. She could see the shoreline. She could see the runway. There was just enough time for that airplane, Rob and his wife, Kathy. But Rob getting up in that airplane and talking her down, Kathy doing a fantastic job on the ground, her son Jim calming her mother and encouraging her, and it was just an amazing event, a miracle. Okay, I mentioned we were going to talk about this United Airlines 737-800 coming in from I think Tampa to Houston. They were descending. This is a day where there was a lot of convective activity out, had just passed the Houston area, was kind of east of Houston, filling Louisiana and heading, extending down into the Gulf of Mexico. And this United flight, 1727 from Tampa, was coming in. They were descending. I'm not sure exactly where they were. They were cleared to descend to 6,000 feet. I don't think they were quite at 6,000 feet at this point. They knew they were going to experience turbulence. They turned the fastened seatbelt light on. They made an announcement to the passengers that they need to be in their seats with their seatbelts fastened. And I think the flight attendants were still up, probably trying to secure the cabin, when they hit a little bit of this convective activity, from what I can tell, looking at the flight track on flightaware.com. Looks like they kind of caught a little bit of one of the thunderstorm cells, and they hit some severe turbulence. Okay, so if everybody is in their seat with their seatbelt fastened, at least the passengers, nobody's going to get hurt, right? Yes, you're right. But guess what? There were 12 passengers injured and taken to the hospital. Now, what that tells me is, folks, if the seatbelt light is on, if there is an announcement that you need to have your seatbelt fastened, put the darn seatbelt on. It's for your safety. And these passengers learned that if you ignore the seatbelt light, if you ignore the announcement from either the flight attendant cabin crew or the cockpit crew, and you decide to leave your seatbelt off, guess what? You could be injured, seriously injured. There were some reports based on this event in the Aviation Herald where some people who on the flight were commenting, saying that, yeah, the dude in front of me, his head basically went through the passenger service unit, that plastic, hard plastic right above your seat where you know, reach up and click the button for, you know, your reading light and your flight attendant call button, the little vent that you, the little eyeball vent that you turn to increase or decrease the flow of oxygen, the panel above there that has the oxygen masks. His head went through that, broke it completely. Serious injuries. Why? Because he did not have his seatbelt on. Come on, people. You know, this is not funny. This is serious. If you're a passenger, I recommend that you always, A-L-W-A-Y-S, always have your seatbelt on. Now, I understand that nature calls and you need to get up and go to the bathroom occasionally. Okay, well, you're at risk when you do that, you know, understandably. But, you know, that's just one of those things. You got to do it. But if the seatbelt light is on, do not. Stay in your seat, please. Keep your seatbelt fastened, and you're going to be safe. So that's the moral to the story. Okay, we have some feedback from Liz. She sent me this regarding Ryanair. You know, I like to talk about the CEO, Michael O'Leary. He always has these crazy ideas. Well, here's another one. Ryanair tells cabin crew to lose weight in the latest bid to save money. Michael O'Leary has advised cabin crews to watch their weight in a bid to save on rising fuel costs. The controversial airline chief has also reduced the size of his in-flight magazine, cut the amount of ice served with drinks, and has considered removing armrests. The budget airline is also in favor of a fat tax on heavier passengers who would be asked to pay more for their seats. As fuel prices rise dramatically, the airline has admitted it is taking extraordinary measures to save costs. Now, you know, you think that this is pretty far out, but actually, now, of course, it had nothing to do with fuel savings, but years and years ago, flight attendants, or what we called stewardesses, back in the old days, they did have pretty stringent weight requirements. You couldn't be, you know, more than a certain weight based on your height, and you couldn't be married, and there were several other restrictions involved. And again, that has nothing to do with fuel savings. Back then, fuel was cheap, and nobody really cared much about the cost of fuel. The big cost was labor in those years. But there were reasons for the airline managements to do that. They wanted the flight attendants to be, you know, attractive and, you know, thin and not married. And anyway, I don't want to go into that. But, yeah, it's not a new thing. But this time, O'Leary wants to save some money by reducing the weight on the airplanes. Crazy? Yeah. I also received this email from Kevin. He says, "Hello, Captain Jeff. My name is Kevin from Minneapolis. Started listening to podcast 3 episodes ago. I was a former mechanic at the now defunct Northwest Airlines. I have since changed my career as a biomedical tech the past few years. I enjoy all the episodes of the Airline Pilot Guy podcast and really enjoy all the topics since many questions come to mind. I'm attaching pictures of my past experience in aviation for you to enjoy. Thanks, Kevin." Well, thank you, Kevin. Appreciate your feedback. And let's see, I'm looking at these pictures right now. One of them looks to me like a Northwest Airlines 747, probably one of the 200 models, one of the ones they were using for. Well, no, this is not a freighter because it's it has windows. So it was a passenger version, but it doesn't look like it's going to fly very well. It's sitting on its gear. It looks like in one of the boneyards in the middle of the desert. I think I can see a L-1011 tail in the background. But this sucker doesn't have any wings, nor does it have a tail. But so it's just basically a fuselage with some of the main gear that was attached to the fuselage, keeping it upright. So that's an interesting photo. And then the other photo he included in his email was a picture from the perspective of the boom operator on a KC-135, I'm guessing, maybe a KC-10, about to refuel an F-16, U.S. Air Force F-16 fighter. And so, I don't know, I'm gathering that maybe, Kevin, you were, before you became a mechanic for Northwest Airlines, that maybe you were in the Air Force as a boom operator. I don't know, am I right? I have been in the other end of the air refueling process when I flew C-141s in the Air Force. We several times met up with tankers to get refueled in flight. And let me tell you something, folks. That is the most bizarre thing I think I've ever done in my flying career. It's just unnatural for two airplanes to actually be touching each other up at 30,000 feet or whatever altitude you are. The noise of that boom hitting the refueling receptacle on your airplane is just, it sounds like the sheet metal is just, you know, peeling off the airplane. Just a very weird sound and weird sensation. Just not natural. But anyway, thanks for the photos, Kevin, and thanks for your feedback. Keep listening, and if you have any questions or comments, please don't be shy. Send them in. Okay, another piece of feedback. Let me see how we're doing on the time. Looks like, I can't tell because I ended up stopping and starting. So anyway, I'm going to keep trudging on here. This is from Chris from Boston. He's the one that sent me some feedback regarding the air conditioning packs and his experience on a shuttle flight with some smoke a little while back. Anyway, he writes, "Hi, Captain Jeff, Chris from Boston again. Just saw this clip come over FlightAware. By the way, this is me speaking. FlightAware.com, great site. Great news items. They call them squawks. I sign up for the daily newsletter of things going on in aviation. It's also a great service to use if you're on a flight and you want to track your flight. You can actually see the actual route of flight that's filed for that particular flight. And you can see it on a map overlay with weather and such. Pretty cool. Anyway, back to Christopher's email. I'm surprised that they took off even after the skid. Wouldn't you have worries about the nose gear tires?" And then he provides a link for me here, a YouTube link. And I looked at it, and it is a an Acme Airlines airplane that is taking off from Norfolk, Virginia. And they're coming onto the runway with the power up. And apparently the nose gear starts skidding a bit and producing a little bit of tire smoke, and then they have to reduce the throttle or the power to get the airplane, you know, straightened out on the runway, and then I'm reapplying power. Now, I don't remember that incident, so I don't think that was me. I hope not. I think it was actually a couple of years ago, just now making the rounds in the aviation world. But his question is, wouldn't you be concerned about the nose wheel tires? Well, you know, think about it. Every time you land, you know, you see all the videos of people landing. You see the little bits of smoke come from the tires, you know, the rubber from the tires hitting the runway and going from, you know, not rotating at all to rotating very, very fast. You know, these airplanes are touching down at anywhere from about 120, 130 knots to maybe getting close to 200. So depending on the weight of the airplane and such. So the action of the rubber hitting the cement is a pretty violent one, and you throw a little bit of downward velocity to the runway, and sometimes you see quite a lot of smoke. Yeah, I've been at the controls when the airplane has kind of come down a little bit harder than I anticipated, and probably left a big puff of rubber smoke. Tire smoke on the runway. And that's what's happening here. Of course, it's a side load. And trust me, these nose wheels and main gear tires have quite high sidewall stress limitations. So no, I wouldn't be concerned about that, actually. Now, of course, this crew, I'm sure, doesn't even know that the nose wheel tires were, spitting out some smoke. I think that they thought everything was under control once they got it all straightened out, got out of the skid, and applied power again. So, honestly, I wouldn't be worried about it. And obviously, they did just fine. But thanks for the I did see that as well, Chris, on FlightAware, and thought it was a pretty interesting YouTube video. I'll include the link in the show notes. Okay, here's another one from Lee from New Jersey. Hi, Captain Jeff. As a commercial aviation enthusiast, I wanted to tell you how much I enjoy your Airline Pilot Guy podcast. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and yours is one of my favorites. I look forward to new episodes. At any rate, I was recently on a flight from Fort Lauderdale to Newark on a United 737-900. The flight was delayed 30 minutes because of the weather in Newark. Even with this 30-minute delay, the pilots managed to get us to Newark for an on-time arrival. The pilot made an announcement over the PA, saying that he would be flying as fast as possible and on a different route if possible to get us there on time. And apparently it worked. My question for you is, when one of your flights is delayed, do you alter how you are flying your MD-80 to make up for lost time? If so, if you're applying more thrust, are you applying more thrust or flying at a different altitude or requesting a different route? Does your airline want you to do this even if it burns more fuel? Keep up the great work. Think of you every time I see an Acme Airlines MD-80. Cheers, Lee from New Jersey. Okay, well, let's talk about this. First of all, let me play this little clip that I thought would be appropriate for your email. And here we go.
So I'm on the plane. We left late. Pilot says we're going to be making up some time in the air. Well, I thought, well, isn't that interesting? They just make up time. That's why you have to reset your watch when you land. Of course, when they say they're making up time, obviously they're increasing the speed of the aircraft. Now, my question is, if you can go faster, why don't you just go as fast as you can all the time? Come on, there's no cops up here. Nail it. Give me some gas. We're flying.
Okay, well, that seems to make sense. That, by the way, that was Seinfeld and one of my favorite sitcoms. And, when you think about it, he's right. Why don't we always fly as fast as we can all the time? Okay, well, you might have this idea that we are just getting in an airplane and just taking off and we're on our own, just flying somewhere. Well, we're not. Believe it or not, even though you can't see it, we're flying on highways in the sky, and everything is very controlled. In fact, all commercial airlines are required to always fly under instrument flight rules. Even if it's clear in a million, we still have to fly using what we call IFR, or instrument flight rules. And that means we're in positive control 100% of the time. Now, there are some exceptions. Some of you professional pilots out there will say, "Oop, whoop, Captain Jeff, you're not correct, 100% correct on that." Yeah, there are some places around the country where you end up getting into uncontrolled airspace, and they're mostly out in the western United States, like in Montana and stuff like that, where you may actually receive instructions from an air traffic controller to basically you're cleared to fly an approach to Bozeman Airport, you know, radar service is terminated, and basically you're on your own. But pretty much 99% of the places that we fly around the country are under positive control. That means that air traffic control, headquartered FAA, headquartered in Washington, the big flow control center, I think it's Washington, has this big giant computer that's kind of monitoring the flow of traffic everywhere. And when you have weather that's impacting a particular airport or a hub or just a lot of traffic or whatever, they say, you know what, we need to start metering this traffic so that we don't have all these airplanes up there. We don't know what to do with them. They got to fly around and circle and hold. I don't know if you noticed this or not, but over the past 5 years or maybe more, you don't hold a lot anymore. You end up taking off. You might be delayed on the ground, but once you leave, it's usually a straight shot. Well, not a straight shot, but it's usually an uninterrupted flight, not usually having to hold en route. And the reason for that is they analyze the traffic flows and decide, you know what, let's keep this airplane, this flight, at this airport on the ground a little bit longer, give them a wheels up time. In other words, a time where they're allowed to take off so that this will all work out so they don't have any delay en route and they'll land, you know, without having to hold. So that it actually has been working pretty well. So you're wondering, well, what do we do? Now he said that they're going to fly faster and they're going to try to, you know, get some shortcuts and fly different routes and stuff. And yeah, I say the same thing. But honestly, I don't have a lot of control over that. I can request it, but I may not get it. Probably not. My speed is going to be tightly controlled by the air traffic controllers. And the route is controlled as well. We file for certain routes, and then we can request direct from this point to this point to try to cut off some of the mileage. But if you're in a situation where you're being held on the ground and everything is being metered, chances are they're not going to give you shortcuts. So that's kind of something we say to let you know that we are going to try to do everything we can to get you there as quickly as we can and close to on time as possible. Now, guess what? When marketing comes up with these schedules, they have to look at the prevailing winds at the time, you know, the time of year, what historically this flight has, how long it's taken to go from this airport to airport, and they build and they also factor in the amount of time it takes to taxi out, to taxi in, the time of day, etc. And they come up with a block time, a scheduled departure time and a scheduled arrival time. And that time doesn't always match up, and I've talked about this on previous podcasts before, doesn't always match up with our actual flying time. Our actual flying time is based on the mileage we're going to fly and the actual winds that are happening at that time. So it could be that, you know, marketing has set up the schedule for a flight to fly from Atlanta to Boston, and it's, let's say, 2 hours and 20 minutes block to block. Okay, well, they figured, well, this time of day, the flight's leaving. It's going to take 20 minutes to taxi out before they take off. It's going to take this many minutes taxiing in, and the flying time is usually this amount. But guess what? Today, you might have a system up there where you have a lot of tailwind, and it may only take you, let's say, an hour and a half instead of the usual hour and 45 minutes or hour and 50 minutes. I'm just making these numbers up. I don't know if they have any, you know, relation to reality. But so even if we are assigned a wheels up time from air traffic control, a flow time, because of the fact that the winds might be favorable or it might be the time of year where, you know, it's not going to take as long, even because you have been delayed, the flying time is not going to be as long as it normally is, and you may actually arrive on time. So that's one of the factors involved here. You may actually experience the opposite, where you're flying against the wind and the headwinds are unusually high for this time of year, and the flight's blocked for 2 hours and 20 minutes. But guess what? Your flying time might be 2 hours and 5 minutes. And then you have to add the taxi out time, the taxi in time, You have a wheels up time. And before you've even taken off, you just know that there's no way that you're going to be arriving on time because the winds are such that it's just going to take you a long time. So I hope that answers that particular question. So it's sometimes, even if you have a delay on the ground, a ground delay, you may actually arrive at your destination on time or perhaps even early, depending on the time of year and the winds and such. There are times, I experience this quite often, where you get a late start for whatever reason, and you're scheduled to fly at 0.75 Mach, 0.76 Mach, and you decide to fly at a little bit higher speed. I'm not talking a lot higher, maybe 0.77, 0.78, which may make up, depending on the length of the flight, may make up about 5 minutes or so. And yes, it does burn more fuel, but you know, you have to kind of balance that with the passenger inconvenience and everything else. So why don't we always fly at the fastest speed? Well, number one, air traffic control may not let us fly at the fastest speed. Number two, it does use more fuel and cost more money. And, you know, that means that we'd have to raise ticket prices to reflect that increased cost. Different altitudes, yeah, sometimes that makes a difference depending on the winds. You know, usually the lower altitudes have lower winds. Of course, if you're going with the wind, you want to have as much wind as possible. If you're going against the wind, you want to have as little headwind as possible. So all those are factors. And yeah, that's usually something. The last question he has is, does your airline want you to do this even if it burns more fuel? Well, it really depends. They'll usually give you some kind of a message where we want you to do this, even though it's going to cost us more money because, you know, the a lot of the folks on board have connections and we want them to make their connections because that costs the airline a lot of money, especially when you're operating toward the end of the day. Passengers don't have the opportunity to have any other flight connection opportunities, and then the airline may have to actually you know, foot the bill for hotels and such. Now, you know, if it's due to a weather situation or an air traffic control traffic situation, I don't think the airlines are required to provide any hotel or meal, you know, vouchers or whatever. If it's a mechanical delay, you know, something that it was the airline's fault, yes, they are required to do that, but I don't know all the details regarding that. That's one of those things that's not really my bailiwick, my department. But anyway, I hope that explained a little bit, and that may have actually ended up, you know, giving more questions about that whole situation. So if you're still confused about that, send in your feedback to me, and maybe I can straighten it out. Okay. There were some other things I wanted to talk about here, but I'm going to save that for the next Airline Pilot Guy episode. It's regarding a recently released report on an incident that occurred last year in January of 2011, an Air Canada 767 flight from Toronto to Zurich with some passenger injuries. But we're going to save that till the next episode, episode number 28. And I wanted to let you know that I think I mentioned it in the last episode that I was going to install on the airlinepilotguy.com website and the Catholic Pilot website, a website widget that allows you to leave voice feedback. Now, you know that you didn't hear any voice feedback on this episode, and that makes me sad because I love to hear your voice. You may not think you have a good voice. I don't care what your voice sounds like. It's interesting for listeners to hear other voices besides mine. And so it's easy now. Just go to CatholicPilot.com or AirlinePilotGuy.com. Look over to the right. There's a blue tab that says something about, you know, send voicemail or something like that. Little microphone icon. Click on that, and what that little widget will do is that if your laptop or your computer has a microphone, it will you know, sense that, and you just click the thing and record a message, and just sitting there in front of your computer, you can record a message. I don't think it works on smartphones or iPads. I think it's a flash mechanism, so you have to have flash. But most laptops and computers have flash installed, and it's a great, easy, convenient way to send me voice feedback. Now, if you want to do it the old school way, you can call area code 304-99-PILOT. That's 304-997-4568. Or if you want to be boring, you can send an email feedback to feedback@airlinepilotguy.com. But come on, give me some voice feedback. We all want it. Be brave. Do it. Right now. Okay. Until next time, it's time for me to shut this thing down. Time to land, head to the gate, shut down the engines, and put this baby to bed. And again, thanks for listening. Oh, just an aside here. If you have a chance and you're listening to this via subscription to iTunes, well, even if you're not, head over to iTunes and leave me a review. That helps, because when people are doing searches for aviation-related podcasts, especially airline-related podcasts, they'll see mine. And if it has some good reviews, maybe they'll notice it more. So, and even if it's a bad review, go ahead. You know, I can take it. But head over to iTunes if you have a chance. Leave me a review. That'd be fantastic. And as always, I hope that you have a great week. Hopefully, again, another podcast next week. And until next time, wishing you unlimited visibility, clear skies, and tailwinds. Take care, and God bless.
In this day and age of automated cockpits, hand flying is in danger of becoming a lost art. We have to remember as pilots that we are there because of our flying skills.
This production is affiliated with SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.